right, how's it going? Welcome to Harleen Hideout. My name is Harleen Jimmy, and today we are going back to one of our ideas. We're throwing into the pits of doom, Killswitch Engage versus Shitty Oath, Under Oath.
Oh, wow.
I joke. I do like Under Oath, but
I feel like you could have came up with a much better punchline than like Shitty Oath, but I can't think of
why are you mad about it?
Joining me, of course, is my co-host, Ender Blades. What's up, bro?
What is up, man? Right off the bat, this is going to be interesting.
And then, of course, from the Organic Poison Podcast, Mr. Shano.
Yes, very happy to be here once again with you fellars.
And if you were to listen to the one we did with Certified Lover Boy versus Donda, you already knew he popped off fire, so he had to be a part of this one.
Oh, man. Quick update on that. They're friends again, and they're both nominated for Album of the Year and the Best Rap Album.
So their plan worked.
Yeah.
Their plan worked, yeah. Anyway.
Rest in peace to Virgil Abloh.
Anyway, Mr. Shane, I'm going to let you have your opening remarks because I will be taking Killswitch aside on this one. Xander will be the commentator for this one. So I'll let you open it up.
Okay, cool. Well, I will. Shane Smith, am here to defend on behalf. We have no formal way of doing this, so forgive me.
You're making it formal. I don't know why you're making it formal. It's weird now.
Yeah. No, okay. Well, look.
Look, I am here on behalf, like, man.
Okay, yeah, anyway. So Under Oath is the band in which that I am alleged to defend in this stature. Under Oath is a band from Florida/Alabama, I believe, initially when they started. They had members from those two places. There's no telling where the hell they're from now. But
He is skimming that Wikipedia page.
I wanted to just have it as a point of reference. I have, like, five tabs open, but but yeah, so they were an all right band at first, but they kind of suck. So like, I don't even really refer to them that much to them. There's a lot of people, I'm quite sure, they built their fan base back then when they had a vocalist in the band named Dallas Taylor, and it was a completely different lineup than it is today. Yeah. Those guys. Okay. They signed to a record label, Tooth and Nail Records and, Solid State Records. They pretty much were the same thing, but they had a different list of bands. And they put out an album called The Changing of Times. And The Changing of Times was their last album with Dallas Taylor, but it was their first album where they started to utilize more singing and screaming. I've said this before. I've never said it on record, but they are the Drake of screamo music. Any reaction to that? Anybody got a reaction to that one?
No, I kind of agree with him.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Now, I'm not just talking about in the fact that they're like the biggest screamo band in the world, but I'm just saying if you look at back in the day, it was like the way they pulled off the singing and the screaming at the same time, and they intertwined that sound. Now, obviously, today, every band you're going to hear is doing that, like every band. But back in the day, it wasn't as they weren't as successful at it until they had bands such as Under Oath and bands that Under Oath influenced. I'm not saying that other people didn't do it, but Under Oath did it best. In my opinion, they did it best. I am trying to defend them here. But so they also, aside from their,
that's me drinking some tea.
Aside from their individual sound that they have helped curate and mold in this Changing of Times album, well, they up the ante, they get rid of their vocalist, and then they go on to an album that most people who know who Under Oath is and likes them would say that this is their best album. They came out with their only Chasing Safety, and it had, a handful of songs. It's Dangerous Business, Reinventing Your Exit, what is that one song? Down Set Go or Ready Set Go. Some shit, whatever, but they have, they have like the whole album is like non-skippable. A lot of people will probably make it to the last song and then be like, all right, let's move on to something else. Cause it's kind of slower and it says something about Jesus. So most people are like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Jesus. Oh shit.
But, yeah, and they were under the moniker of being a Christian band back in the day as well. That was a thing under them. Apparently, you'll find out later in their story that they apparently fucking hated having to tell people they were a Christian band. So, Yeah, but anyway, after that album had great success, all over the underground market, if you will, they toured a whole bunch, and then they came out with an album called Define the Great Line, which personally I think was their best album. That album was great. Now, you know, insert just however those bands would get bigger, because that's what happened. They just got bigger and bigger with each album up until a certain point. And, but anyway, after that album came out, they came out with this Lost in Sound and Separation. Hang on, I'll tell you the exact name in just a second.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, yeah.
I just listened to it this morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, and mind you, when this song came out, not this song, when this album came out, immediately when it came out, I was not super into it. But to be fair, I was not super into like that kind of music at the moment. Well, like 6 months after that album came out, I couldn't stop listening to it. Turned out to be, you know, one of their...
Yeah, you got my album, didn't you?
What's that?
Yeah, I think I gave you my album.
Me?
I think it was either Walmart or Sound Shop. We bought it. We listened to it. We're like, it sucks.
I tossed it to you
and I said, fucking do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, I think I remember like asking James about it or like seeing it in his car or something at the time. I was just kind of like, yo, don't y'all like Underoath? And he's like, man, fuck this group. And I was like, yo, what happened? I thought this was the thing.
The album was very underwhelming.
He's like, it's trash.
Yeah.
Like, damn, all right. And I didn't listen to Underoath for a few years after that. Just based on, I ain't even gonna worry about it. No.
I will say a lot of the bands that were in that genre in that time period, especially as they were, you know, evolving, because they had to evolve, right? Obviously. But as they were evolving, they were, you know, like, how do we evolve this sound? Because the sound kind of started with all of us, including them. It's like, you don't want to continue to put out the exact same thing, but in the same breath, you don't want to straight, like the whole thing, oh, we don't want to sell out, which is obviously what they eventually did. Whether we judge them or not, you know, we'll get to that. But at the time, it's like they evolved their sound, and I just didn't like the evolution personally. I guess,
to that point, now you have a lot of bands now that, you know, me and James have talked about on a few other podcasts that are trying to bring that sound back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I guess, you know, I guess they saw that even though it didn't evolve, it was why fix what isn't broken?
Sure. Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, right, it's like, don't you, how much are you trying to squeeze out of the orange? Like, if you don't try to, it's like, if you keep a plant, you don't take all of the life out of a plant, then the plant will keep growing and just at a slower pace. But if you suck it all out at once and try to get it as big as you can, you're going to burn out. There's a better analogy for that.
Also, at that time, we started listening to, a lot of Face Down record stuff.
I remember.
So we was listening to stuff like, what's the name of the band? For Today.
Yeah. And Plea for Purging was on.
Plea for Purging, yeah. And then we were listening to Whitechapel and stuff. So
yeah.
I like that heavier sound than what Under Oath went for with that album. That's really why.
Definitely. The more aggressive music. Like, because the thing is with those bands, like, they just focus so much on like sound and strange, like the strangeness of some of the stuff. Like, they wanted it to sound kind of abrupt and crazy. I always say the Norma Jean sound. You know, like, I was like, bound up.
Yeah.
And it's like, that shit's cool and all, but it's like, I don't know about like an entire album where your focus, like, you guys in the studio probably nerding out over that. That's probably like awesome. And clearly a lot of people liked that album. I'm not saying that, you know, it definitely, their best three albums in a row for sure, hands down, was the first three albums I talked about. Once they got into this one, they released this album, then they moved on. Just so I'll move on, I guess, but they move on. And once they moved on and did another album, shortly after that, they called it quits. They broke up. Aaron Gillespie left the band. I believe he already had a side project called The Almost. Aaron Gillespie is their drummer. He's also the main guy who sings.
I actually like that band. It has some pretty good songs.
That album they put out really wasn't that bad. I mean, they had Southern the song. Blame it on the Southern.
It was basically just Aaron all the time.
Aaron, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they put out another song because they had that album and then he put out another single and that single was
huge. You couldn't say it was super.
Yes. And that single was huge as shit. Yeah. No one could ever see the things that way.
No one will try. Yeah, that was that new one, Southern Weather.
Oh shit. Yeah. And he goes, dun, dun,
Because T-Frost had that album and he played it all the time.
That shit was sick.
James was like, I liked the album before T-Frost played it all the time.
Damn. And see, I don't remember hearing anything. I don't remember hearing anything else about them after that. Like, but I think it's because that was like another Christian project. And like Aaron Gillespie probably, like, if I know how any of that stuff works, do you think about making like all the donations and all the Christian camps you went and performed and all this other stuff only to come out like a year later and be like, hey, I'm not a Christian. Sorry. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
you
know,
he was preaching. He was preaching hardcore after that crap. I remember seeing him with like the girl from Flyleaf on some sort of, what's that dude? Billy Idol? Billy? I don't know what the hell that dude's
name. Nah, Billy, not Billy Idol.
Billy Joel.
Yeah, Billy Joel. No, yeah.
Billy Joel was the piano man.
The Christian dude who's over a bunch of like
Joel
evangelical channels or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Aaron Gillespie talk to, he was with a girl from Flyleaf and they were like talking about, you know, their experiences being Christians and stuff. So I'm guessing for a while he was just doing missionary work or something.
Yeah, well, like there was a long period of time. He was like a pastor and all this other shit.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still marketed as a Christian. If you go look at any, like, the bookings and stuff, it still says him as a Christian, like, Christian artist.
Yeah, him as a solo artist, probably, but him in Under Oath, he's probably like, But I bet he doesn't do any of that shit anymore. I bet it's just
just keeps his mouth shut and lets Spencer take the wheel or something.
Well, I mean, if you ever watch like in the interviews or like behind the scenes, Aaron looks so uncomfortable just sitting there. he's just like, it's like he doesn't want to be there and he got forced to go back.
He's like, I really wanted this band to come back together, but if I known that Spencer was going to be sitting up here, like pretty much saying "fuck everything Christian,"
like I don't stoner know, metal.
If he would have, like, he's right though. He just seems like he's really uncomfortable about it. But I guess they just wanted to bring the band back together, so they'll probably break up after this again.
I don't know. We'll see how this January goes when the Warriors comes out.
Okay. But before we get there, look, after they put out that album, they broke up more or less because things were going awry. Clearly they didn't want to be a Christian band. Clearly they, you know, or whatever it may be, something was going on. Cause the reason why we went on that tangent about Aaron was because he left the band and they got Norma Jean's old drummer to come play for him. And I believe he was on that last album and Aaron was not. So, there's a possibility that there was, actually a rift between, Aaron and Spencer. I don't know that. I haven't read that, but I mean, I could easily see why there would be because, you know, and then the thing is there's these other guys that have been in the band just as long. There's no telling what they might have all just wanted to break up. I don't know. You could probably find it somewhere. I have not found that information, what the reason was, but nonetheless, about 5 or 6 years later, or 8 years later, they basically started promoting this thing. Like they started an Instagram and all this other stuff and it said Rebirth. And of course, I mean, anybody who is, you know, who knows anything about culture at all, Rebirth is pretty much going to tell you that these guys are about to get back together and do the damn thing again. You don't know to what extent or whatever. And then you find out they're booking a tour, a goddamn world tour where they are playing both Define the Great Line and They're Only Chasing Safety in their entirety. So they do that tour and then they just go and do that tour again. And then while they're doing that tour, they announce that their album is done for their new stuff. And then they release a single for their new stuff and it sounds completely fucking different. It does not sound anything like, their past stuff. I mean, it kind of does. It does kind of sound like that.
I remember we were all like sitting in your house and you had played it. Like, I think, I don't know, like Tyler Jackson, they may have been in there. I think Brittany and them. But you played the song Erase Me. We were like, yeah. And I was just kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
I remember me, you, and Sam sitting there in my room and we were sitting there listening to it. We're all just like, what?
Yeah. Cause I think Erase Me kind of came out and kind of grabbed everyone. Was like, all right, this sounds like it could be okay. And then that next song came out and I was like, there's only one part in this entire song that sounds like
On My Teeth, I think it was.
Yeah. And I said, and this is the part where Aaron is singing. The rest of this is weird.
It's like, yeah.
It was just like it was Spencer's other project, Stoner Metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sleep Waves or something like that.
Yeah.
Sleep waves.
Yeah, I think I really do think it was called sleep waves.
It was something sleep. So
what's that called? Like doomer gaze metal music or something like that?
Metal. It's just stoner metal. That's all what it is.
It's just fucking lame.
It's just, it's just bullshit.
But yeah, nonetheless, they came out and, you know, right now they're trying their best to be cutting edge and, you know, they're breaking into the, you know, they're, I'm talking about like leaps and bounds larger of a band than they were back when any of the previous parts of this conversation. After they came back and they had, I mean, I don't know if their intentions were to put out an album or not, but they had great success when they went and toured that, doing both those albums. Like people, they were selling out amphitheaters and shit for people to come see them perform. I mean, I think they brought like Bring Me the Horizon on tour with them or something, or Dance Gavin Dance. I know one of the times we saw them, they had Dance Gavin Dance with them, but I'm quite sure that was after, that either when that album had come out. Yeah. That first album had come out when we went and saw them. But, yeah. So. And then now they make like progressive rock, like for, you know, ketamine addicts, but it's really not bad music. It's pretty driving. Like there's good things to be said about their music for sure. It's just, it is different. And obviously, you know, we'll probably get deeper into the conversation later on about nostalgia. Nostalgia plays a really big part with both of these bands that we have to discuss here. But, as far as them doing a new thing, I think it's actually pretty good. They've, for themselves, even if I am not into it as much, I think overall they have brought in a more of an audience. And though some of us will be like, you know, I don't really care as much, we are still sold on their old music. So no matter what they have successfully not pissed off all of their old fans by them changing their sound, because it's almost like they had to. They took enough time off to where it's like, hey, look, we are creating and divulging into a different sound.
They had to adapt to the times,
right?
To say so.
They had to make it worth it. I mean, they all, to my understanding, everybody except for Spencer in that band has like a wife and kids. So it's like, it's not like these guys can just go and play rock star for, you know, a couple of months out of the year anymore. I'm not saying they were doing that in the past, but I'm just saying if they're got to come out, all chips are in and they've got to be getting paid. And something tells me they're doing a pretty good job. They're doing a lot of festivals. And I mean, to be fair, a good bit of the stuff I'm referring to was going on before COVID, but like you said, they have a new album on the way out. And they just released a single. Well, they've released, I believe, maybe three singles in the past 6 months or a year. And
it actually didn't sound that bad.
Yeah, some of it doesn't sound too bad, but it's just like,
it's like if that was the album they released first, then I'd probably have been a little bit more on board with it.
Yeah, right. like I said, new album Voyeurist.
Yeah,
comes out January 14th, so it comes out next year. And Damn Excuses and Cycle and Hallelujah has been the three they released, and Cycle does have Ghost Mane on it.
Okay, I was trying to find the name of that song.
And yeah, they released another one called Pneumonia.
Yeah.
But the only one I've listened to has been Damn Excuses.
Yeah, well, I listened to the one that they have that's got Ghost Mane on. It's pretty cool, I guess. I mean, it could have easily, it could have just as easily like been Spencer that did with that part in the song, and I would have never known. Like, but to be honest, I'm not like, I couldn't tell you the name three songs that Ghost Mane does. I've listened to his music before, but I just am not that into him. I mean, but as far as bridging,
doesn't he try to do like the fast rap thing or whatever?
He is heavily metal and like, you know, this kind of music influenced, like in his music, you can tell like his shows are obviously nuts, but also like he just screams a lot in his music.
Oh, okay. I got you.
SoundCloud certified.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of deathcore people are into Ghost Mane too. So,
yeah, he's kind of, if he was a little bit bigger, he would be like the father of crossovers, because he really is that guy. Like his kind of music is like what every guy in the metal scene wants to do when they're like a teenager. Like, oh man, I want to integrate rap music with metal. This is fucking great. Like, you know, I'm making fun of myself a bit here, but yeah, it's a thing.
And yeah, so I've said this before. It's gonna be how fucking metal. Oh, it's gonna be how the rock genre survives.
Yeah. There you go. And I mean, you also look at it this way. Dudes grow up and have anxiety and realize that they can't deal with people the way that they used to. So it's like, oh, you know what? Rather than there being five or six of us together trying to be in a band, I'll just start rapping. And then, you know, that's why every white scene kid that grows out of playing music and has to like become an adult to any extent has to start, or they start making rap music, or they make like lo-fi music or something.
Right. So still switching gauge, I guess now. Was formed late 99 in, I believe, Massachusetts. Yes, Westfield, Massachusetts. And of course, Killswitch Engage does have, let's see, Adam D, which is big into a producer with Jesse.
He's the goat.
Yeah, Adam D's the one who pretty much made every fucking MySpace type era band popular.
Yes.
Cause he's the one who had a hand with it. Attack, bands like that, any kind of MySpace era up to post-hardcore, he's had a hand recording them.
Yeah, he even produced stuff for Azalea Dying, ironically, right. We were speaking about them.
Right. Mikey D on the bass and, you know, Jesse on guitar and vocals up to a certain point. They put out an EP called Killswitch Engage, and then their first big album came out, Alive or Just Breathing. That one had My Last Serenade on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great song.
This is my last. Yeah, that had My Last Serenade on it.
That's when they still had the angry wall puncher in the band.
Blight to the Lifeless is Barely Breathing, the Sons of War, Rising Side, Number of Days, and Self-Revolution. Then they came out with The End of Heartache, and they got, of course, the GOAT, Howard Jones, on it. And, of course, it was so popular that I think it was the Rose of Charlin. And End of Heartache was actually on the Resident Evil movies.
The End of Heartache is,
which is exactly how I found out about Killswitch Engage. That and Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
End of Heartache is still to this day, and people can say what they want. Maybe there's things that have changed in reality, but in my opinion, top five, I don't know what's placement, but one of the top five, like, biggest, most badass metalcore songs. Like, just metalcore, like, that in that vein of music. Like, that song, everybody knows that song, and everybody's
lit. It is a fucking classic.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. And it's also a really good song if you want to pick up guitar and learn how to play, because it's very simple to play. I play it all the time. And of course, it had A Bid Farewell, Take This Oath, When Darkness Falls, Ward Ablaze, Decoration, Wasted Sacrifice, and Hope Is. And then we move on to As Daylight Dies, which is probably one of the best albums out there.
There's not a skip on that bitch.
This is where Xander's going to chime in, because it has Daylight Dies, This Is Absolution, The Arms of Sorrow, Unbroken, My Curse, For You, Still Beat Your Name, Zeye of the Storm, Break the Sounds, Desperate Times, Reject Yourself, and if you got the special edition like I did, you got the B1, This Is Fire, which they did for the WWE guy, I can't think of his name, CM Punk, I think, and then Holy Diver, which was a Dio.
Which was life-altering. It was that was the Dio cover, Holy Diver. This album came out like around the same time that I was learning how to play guitar. And mind you, I never learned how to play any of those fucking songs, but like I kind of learned how to play My Curse on guitar, like just that opening part.
Down, down, down.
Yeah.
And dude, yeah, it's hard to deny the greatness of that album. That is for sure.
Yeah, I remember.
You need to stop talking, Shane. You know.
Hey, I thought this was like a participation trophy kind of thing. Like nobody actually wins.
But
your house and killing you if you lose.
But of course, after that, Howard leaves the band, and then they come up with their self-titled album called Killswitch Engage. And this says The Reckoning, The Return, A Light in the Dark, A Light in a Darkened World, Starting Over, Lost, Save Me, and I Would Do Anything. This is Goodbye. After that, they go into Disarm the Descent. And this is where I kind of fell off track, because In Due Time, I really didn't like. And Always was the two big singles off that album. They just didn't really pull my attention. But The Turning Point, All We Have, You Don't Bleed For Me, and The Call are all good songs. Then we got Incarnate. That has It Falls On Me, Quite Distressed, Until The Day Cut Me Loose, Hate By Design, and Alone I Stand. And then we go into their newest one, which is called Atonement.
This boys one, be putting out some music, man.
Yeah, there you
go. This one has a single fire, which does have Howard Jones on it, has Us Against the World, The Crownless King, Unleashed, I Am Broken Too, Know Your Enemy, Ravenous, I Can Be the Only One, and Bite the Hand That Feeds. This album actually really got me back into them. So, like I said, their newest one, Atonement, is probably one of the better ones they got going on out of the other two.
New singer.
Yeah. Well, Jesse's still singing. So
I mean, they put Howard back on one of the tracks, all right.
Yeah. Unleash, I think.
It's a pretty short album. It's like about like 11 songs on it.
Yeah, no, the Single Fire is one with Howard Jones. And if you're wondering, Howard does have his own band called Light the Torch.
He just did
this thing with a YouTube guitarist who's pretty famous called Jarrett Dines. They just released this album called Scion, and I've listened to it, and I gotta tell you, it's better than Light the Torch, and it's almost on par with old Killswitch Engage.
Holy shit, all right.
Yeah, Howard gets back to that point where he did old Killswitch 8 on this album, and it sounds really good. I've thoroughly been liking Scion. Regrettably, this is what I've been listening to over the past couple of days. It has been Scion instead of Killswitch and Under Oath. But stands being, I'm still standing by Killswitch, because I vibe to him more than I do over trying to get through the first three Under Oath albums. Like, I'll tell you, if this was 2009, I'd be saying Under Oath has taken this win for me, but I just can't vibe to him like I could back in the day.
Yeah, you just made a little point that I was about to have to make. Continue. go ahead.
No, you chime in now. I'm done.
Yeah. Oh, he's like, that's it. Yeah, so, I mean, given both of those backgrounds, yeah, I had to say for me, it had to be Killswitch Engage. Reason being is, like what James has said, I think when it comes to Under Oath music, it's very scene incorporated. It's very dated. And when I say dated, I don't necessarily mean because of like the time. I mean fucking the end of Heartache and shit. That was like 2004. All this music is old. But Under Oath comes across as like, when you think Under Oath, you think scene. They were like kings of the scene music back in the day.
Right.
They were, you know, in that realm.
Go look at the front row at their shows.
Yeah. All white girls. All the same people at the Travis Scott shows now.
Yeah, there you go.
You also could probably find me and Shane there.
Yeah. No, brother, we'd be in the pit.
Standing awkwardly next to the white girls who don't want to get hit in the face.
I'll protect you. Boom. Just get punched like I'm bleeding. They're like, that's my boyfriend that just punched you.
Man, I've been in the pit so many times with Shane, it's crazy.
Yeah, so, but yeah, that's what I was basically thinking of it. Just the fact that, like, they are very much, curtailed to a certain musical group. Whereas I think Killswitch Engage wasn't quite on par with Under Oath in that sense. I think to me, in my opinion, I think they have more of a wide, expansive group of people who like them. You know what I'm saying? Like, people who fuck with Slipknot probably fuck with Killswitch Engage. People who fuck with Under Oath. You know what I'm saying? I think like a lot of different groups of people will probably listen to Killswitch. I think they're just more accessible, I would say, because they don't have the whole. I mean, I wouldn't know, like, how big were they within the scene as a whole? Like, would you say they were on par with Under Oath?
If you, in my opinion, this is, I think what plays a big part in the way that, to your point, is the fact that Killswitch Engage, despite the fact that like we like them or younger people like them, they had an older audience. Like their music was was more like prone to a older audience.
Grown folks.
Exactly. Even back then. Let's just say
when I was 12 listening to shit. Yeah, grown folks.
Well, what's happening now is Under Oath has spent the past 5 years trying to get away from that previous perception of them. Because that's when I brought that up about, and this is also to your point really, but when I brought that up earlier about how, they were able to change their style and not in such a way, it worked out for them to where not all of their old fan base, they've catered to their old fan base on their part per their return when they did those two tours playing their old greatest fucking hits from their previous albums. And it's like now they're still playing those songs, but they also are projecting to this whole brand new audience. They're trying to transition into that. They're trying to get away.
They're trying to get back on the emo revival train. Like kind of, they're trying to get back. I wouldn't say to the same crowd of people. I mean, probably to that crowd of kids who were like our ages now or whatever, but.
Well, right.
You also got to think Under Oath at the time, back in the day, was more accessible to kids, to seeing kids as, as Killswitch was, because Under Oath toured everywhere and played everywhere at a church, at this festival, out in the park.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
We also have to take into consideration the fact to your point, James, is, back in the day, I mean, we're talking about 10, 15 years ago initially when we came into this kind of music, more or less, you know, give or take. But like this, like it was just then when like Christian metal music was something you could just find. And whether it be because of the internet or accessibility, I mean, I would say it had to have been access to the internet, but like that's the only reason that became such a big deal. You don't even really hear about the Christian bands much anymore, but that's because all of us that were into the Christian bands, that was like our gateway drug to all the other bands. Yeah.
I mean, could you say that was pretty much one of the reasons why they got as popular as they did? Like they had to use the Christian moniker as a way to, you know, kind of make themselves get huge. So I think, didn't Define the Great Line get a Grammy or something based upon that shit?
One of them, their albums got nominated for a Grammy, I'm pretty sure.
But see, it was a good way to guarantee that you were able to play a show though. Yeah, you would always have a place to play it if you played it at a church or, you know, like some fucking farmhouse church or somewhere.
Right. And you could promote it to kids because it didn't have parental advisory because they weren't talking about eating kids and shit. You know,
Spencer was talking about doing drugs and taking his girlfriend to crash in the car and taking her to heaven.
Right. Sure. Yeah. But,
but to the point, it's like, it's more of an, it does placate the teens in a way. Like it really does. It's kind of like the angsty type shit, which is nothing wrong with it, but still deeper, you know, talks about their issues with trying to be a good Christian, trying to be a good person, yada, yada, not having sex too early, so on and so forth, while being, you know, I guess, lyrically artistic or whatever.
If you have sex, how you're going to regret it. You know, that song, A Boy Brushing Living Something.
Yeah, it's like, and even if those songs were not about whatever that's what we all thought it was about. Cause like they tried to say like even back then, oh no, like it's not what you think. It's like, but no, it kind of is. Like that's exactly what you're talking about, which to be fair, we didn't care because it fit the
mold. That's what I'm saying. They would have to say that so the parents wouldn't get pissed off. It's like the parents were probably just thinking, oh, it's just the loud music of this generation. But if anything, it's like, it was actually good for aimless youth who really didn't have shit to do with themselves, especially for like kids in the South or something.
Right.
So I guess, yeah.
They got nominated for, best short form music video for Writing on the Walls, which was on Define the Great Line. So it did get nominated for a Grammy technically. And then they also got nominated for On My Teeth, which was on one of the more recent, or on the more recent album.
They got nominated for two Grammys actually.
Yeah. That one was On My Teeth, best metal performance. What the fuck? I guess if you're going up against Mastodon or something, then.
Oh, hell no. Mastodon. Hell no. They killing them. Mastodon is amazing.
Oh, but James.
Choke cock.
James.
What?
Killswitch Engage has three nominations.
Yeah.
They have one for The End of Heartache, best metal performance. Fucking of course. Good. they got a nomination for best metal performance in Due Time, which came out in 2013.
Right.
And then in 2019, they got the nod for best metal performance on Unleashed.
Right. They also have won Act of the Year in 2007 Outstanding Metalcore Hardcore Band of the Year for 2007.
It's just, it's kind of like what Shade has said. Like, when it comes to Ondorov, I always say their only chase to safety is their, it's basically kind of like they're so far gone. Defying the Great Line is probably like their Take Care. Like, both very well rounded albums, both very good albums. And I wouldn't skip a lot of music on that, but man, Killswitch Engage just has a better sound.
They definitely have a plethora.
Yeah, like their music, in my opinion, I guess the best way to describe it is probably like epic. Like, they have shit that just works. Like I said, I did not skip a damn thing on As Daylight Dies. That is an amazing album. I listened to all of Inner Heartache this morning. Ran through that bitch. When Darkness Falls came on, I was punching the couch for no damn reason. Like, it's
chasing the neighbor's kid.
Yeah, beating up people and stuff. Yeah, but I mean, like, those, to me, they just make, the music just sounds like classic. Like, My Curse, oh my God, dude. Like, all that crap, all those songs just resonate. The Arms of Sorrow, This is Absolution. Like, they just, so many of the songs just hit. I mean, like, in a bigger way, in my opinion, than Underoath. Like, I ain't trying to take nothing away from Underoath. It's just that I feel like Howard and Adam, that's the other guy that
Adam
sings
D,
with.
Yeah. Adam D is the guitarist.
Adam D is the guitarist and Jesse's the vocals.
Yeah, the way that Howard and like Jesse play off each other when they sing, you know, when like Howard comes in with screams and Jesse kind of comes in when it's in when they do that shit, to me, that is a little bit better than how Spencer and Aaron play off each other. I don't know why it is. It just fits. To me, they're just a better band. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I've explained it in the best way that I can. Maybe it's bias, a little bit of bias to me because I've heard them first and I always like their music first, but their music just grabs you instantly. Versus like, you know, Underoath, which kind of has little bills up to it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
What's the song about crashing the car and when they're playing in the snow and all that shit.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. Like, that's a good song. And I'm pretty sure everybody likes that the most on that album. To me, I would say
Reinventing Your Exit is a pretty badass song. And so is the Avoid.
The Impact of Reason is the best one on that fucking album. To me, that's the one.
Was that on?
Yeah, that's on The Only Chase to Safety.
Okay.
Their Only Chase to Safety had their special edition album had one of my favorite songs. That's called I Got 10 Friends on a Crowbar.
Yeah. Wasn't that the one where, like, did they have a music video for that one too?
I don't know. I just know that was one of my favorite ones.
I just thought the title was funny. Well, it was on the deluxe edition
of their Only Chase and Safety.
Yeah.
They're a solid band, but it's like you were saying earlier. It's just that so much of the music can be kind of traced back to the strength of the scene and everything that comes with it. Whereas like I can listen to, you know, I can listen to Killswitch Engage and just think this is just great music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I guess it's because my perspective is that I was not inside the scene. Like, you know, you were, Shane, so maybe a little bit different. It's like, if I was, like James had said, if it was 2006, you know, or whatever, then he may have been leaning more towards Underoath.
Oh, I'm not going to lie. If it was 2000, you know, if it was the only way between 2006 to 2009, I'd be like, nah, bro, Underoath takes the win instantly.
Yeah, yeah. 1,000 times against.
Right.
Yeah, because of how big and how much of a, how connected they were to that pivotal point in musical time that they were, I guess.
Well, right. It's not like that for me. I've also seen Underoath live before. Yeah. And so I have that
nostalgia.
Nostalgia and like, I don't know how else to put it, but so around that time I would be like, yeah, screw Killswitch Engage, you know, My Curse. Yeah, that's a good song, but fucking can't beat Writing on the Walls.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Or you
can't beat
like
in regards
that.
To myself.
But now, you know, times have changed.
Changing of times.
Right. I do like that album, though.
It's a good one.
Me and Sam rip on James about that shit.
All the time.
That's a, they got that. They got that one song on there. The beginning of it, it's like you took me over the edge.
Angel Malou.
Oh man, that shit was classic. But to be, I mean, if you want to be fair, something that's this is one two things I want to point out. I will say that, and I would never argue this point, but nostalgia plays a huge part in the Under Oath thing. Just knowing, like, because it, the fact that it was like, when you had this thing, like, say if you went to a music festival and you went to all these dishes, see these different bands back then, before any of these bands were superstars, but just to us, they were our superstars. And Under Oath plays at the end of the music festival. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and all of these bands picked up something from this band. And I'm just using Under Oath as an example. You could take Metallica or something and be on a bigger scale, but like with, for Under Oath, it's like, man, you, it's like, this is what we came here for. It's like, yeah, we want to see all these other bands, but all of these other bands would have came here to see them. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like, they were your favorite rapper's favorite rapper kind of thing.
Yeah, they were very in tune to the youth culture scene, rock music of the time. So like that helps it out quite a bit. Kind of like what we said about Drake early on, you know, Drake summer 2009, So Far Gone. It matches up with where we were at that age.
Right. It hit perfect timing. Like that was like, that's like at the perfect timing. And then you grow with them for a minute. And then it's like, whenever they are doing something that's not on the same length as you, which I would say is kind of where they got to me. And honestly, that album just wasn't that exhilarating to listen to. That, the Sound of Separation or whatever the fuck it was. Lost in the Sound.
I listen to all, I like Calm or whatever, something about calm, coming down isn't calm or whatever the fuck. That was probably a good song. Yeah, but I don't know. It kind of sounded like the other albums, but just not as maybe,
good.
Maybe, but see, that's what I'm saying. Maybe it has to do with something with the fact that we were kind of getting older or whatever at the time. Right. I don't know. You know, maybe it was cause it's like I said, not having the whole, the revolution of the scene music behind it. You know what I'm saying? Like, now that you're not involved in that movement as much as you were early on, it's kind of like, oh, well, for some reason, this feels different.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. I remember I was big in Day to Remember back then.
Yeah, that was the new ones.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That was
the
new group. Well, Day to Remember kind of came over.
If you want to get into it, what it was like they got all these kids prepared and ready. And what happened was you had bands like The Devil Wears Prada and A Day to Remember and Attack that were like, hey, you're just heavier versions of Under Oath. We'll take that. you know what I'm saying? It's like these guys still have the singing stuff going on, but it's like you guys are like, the jeans got like a little, like, I don't want to say a little tighter, but like, I don't know, it was like a different
nuts,
swag.
The nuts got cut off a little bit more. The sisters' jeans started getting stolen more often.
All the kids were turning in their bandanas for flat bill beanies. I mean, flat bill hats.
Yeah, because I mean, we were moving over into like, I guess, our older teens at that point. But yeah, like, I mean, when I first.
Yeah, we was also listening to Kanye and Drake too.
Yeah, so it was like we had a little bit more of we had more diversity of music to listen to, so we couldn't just be stuck on Under Oath. Y'all couldn't,
right?
Like I was on different shit, but yeah, like when I first heard A Day to Remember, I was like, oh, okay. A Day to Remember seemed like they were highly accessible too, because see, they did pop punk really, really well.
Another Drake.
They had those really, then they had those really, really fucking heavy songs that. Then they had those ballads.
Yeah. Which,
yeah.
The chant, whatever it was that they would chant before they played a breakdown in any song back then was like, that's what's going to take people over the edge.
Yeah.
Like,
la, 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 la. Yeah. That they had.
Disrespect your surroundings. They got the, they're not break my shit. It's like, There is something about starting a fire. You never know how many bridges you'll burn. Like that shit used to get people lit. My friends come first. That's the bottom.
Always talking about their friends. Always talking about the town sucks.
Classic pop punk, man. But they were the way that they bridged. I mean, this is obviously isn't a Day to Remember. I hated on them so hard at first because they took over like a fucking swarm of bees. Yeah, everybody was like repping that maroon hoodie with the fucking yellow shit that was on the cover of that album. And it was just, and everybody had this hoodie. And I was like, this, and in the scene, obviously, I mean, this was, you know, I wasn't in high school or nothing. This was just me and my social circles within the scene. And it was everybody you got in the car with, everybody, three or four people at every show had this hoodie on. And I'm like, man, this, fuck this band. I was like, I hate this band.
What about Underwolf? What happened, guys?
Yeah. Guys, come back.
Yeah, but I mean,
like, fuck you, dude. God's not real.
I have Batman.
Bitch was on drugs, man. It doesn't matter anymore.
I have Jeremy McKinnon in my heart.
Yeah, but but that kind of, I think that kind of goes back in what we were saying. Like, that's one of the reasons why you can date Underwolf like that. It's because, see, the scene moved on. You know what I'm saying? Like, they and that's what happens. You know, those groups of people, they move on to a different type of music and they'll move on to something else, yada, yada, so on and so forth. And so it's kind of like when you've dated yourself like that, which is why you were talking about why they're probably moving on to different shit now, it's kind of hard to get people to look for your music outside of, this makes me feel like I'm 13, 14 again, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Oh, and I want to go hear what they've got going on. What the hell? Like, they have a 3-minute and 21-second song with two verses, a hook and a bridge. It's like, what is this trash? You know, it's like, I don't want this. You know, a lot of people feel that way. But I mean, like I was saying earlier, clearly they've managed to find themselves to have some kind of success. But you could also, something interesting, obviously we have to take into consideration, Killswitch Engage is not actively against Under Oath for any reason. This is just something that we brought up. But if you wanted to pair it against it, it's one of those kind of things like, look, you guys took a break for 6 years. We've been going through, cause when Howard first left the band, that wasn't like some casual split. Like, I remember that people thought he disappeared, but like, it was like all this crazy shit saying that he vanished off the face of the earth. I don't know if that actually happened, but then he came back, but maybe he just vanished because, you know,
it literally happened. He literally vanished off the face.
Oh, well, okay. I meant just like at the time.
Well, when Howard left, he actually was forming another band on the side. And they played around for so long, but then they broke up. Now he's got his new band called Light the Torch.
Yeah, but they say that one of the things I read earlier today was that he supposedly left the band because this was their excuse at the time was that he was leaving the band because he was having complications with his type 2 diabetes.
That's true. Yeah, that's also true. Yeah.
So it was like something with him touring so much because Killswitch Engage was another one of those bands that toured their ass off. And I'm sure they still do, but obviously not to these days. It's a little bit more complicated to just travel the world. But, with them, it's like, okay, well, hey, you know, but how cool of a situation can it be for you to be able to be on good enough terms to get your old vocalist back? Because I know Phil Labonte from All That Remains filled in for a while, but then eventually they got their old vocalist back, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because Howard came back and played one for a while, but then he left and did his own thing. But they're still on such good terms that Howard could easily come back and play any show he wants with them.
He was obviously on their lead single for their album that they put out a music video for. So, I mean, clearly they're on good terms with him too. So whatever did happen, obviously the diabetes thing played a big part of it. But if he did ever actually vanish, I'm assuming that they got that fire rekindled and their friendship at least. Because I'd have been pretty pissed if you just vanished and we're in a band and it's like our career. You know, like, hey,
we need you.
What the hell? You're the killer guy that, man, like for the longest time, people are like, dude, Killswitch Engage has a black guy as their vocalist. Dude, he is a fucking incredible singer. And it's like, okay, well, black people can sing. I'm not sure if you were aware or not. Like, that is a thing.
Also remember being, hey, black people like metal? What?
Yeah.
And it's just like, have you not listened to like any of the older stuff? Like from there's been a lot of black bands throughout time.
Yeah.
You know, there was a black punk band from the 80s and before that, stuff
Bad
like
Brains,
that, you know,
Bad Brains,
yeah.
Super, super popular, like a staple in punk rock music, for sure.
It's just not one of those things that people talk about, I guess.
I'm not gonna lie, it is a lot more.
People who know the music would know, but yeah.
It's a lot more common these days.
Yeah.
For sure. Like if you're looking through an online zine or something, anything, like you're going to see, it's a lot less tokenized for a black guy to be involved in the scene, which I mean, obviously, I mean, it was a subculture back in the day. I'm sure there was always a one or two white dudes that hung out in hip hop circles until, you know, people started making money off of it. Then they're like, hello, white kids. I am an old white man. Hello,
black people. I'm with it, too. And we was like, all right, here we go. Like that fucking video James showed me, like this. What was it, like an Indian dude? You remember that shit? It was like this video he had us react to. This guy was like, I'm that nigga. I was like, oh, hell. Oh, shit. And it was just like, it was one black dude in the back drumming. I'm just like, I know he's just here. I know he's just here just dealing with the shit.
Yeah.
Well, it was so bad as the drummer was actually getting into the beat, too. He was just sitting there, he was getting into it. I was like, oh.
Ain't nobody else going to do it.
It was so bad.
It's just painful.
Yeah, but, because I think when I first, like I said, when I first heard Killswitch Engage, I was like, damn, this sounds good. I'm like, that dude has a really different sort of voice over rock. I looked at him, I was like, ah, okay. I was like, it makes sense. I'm like, he sounds very, very, I don't even know how to describe Howard's vocals, but it is soulful. I mean, would you say that a little bit?
Yeah, he, soulful.
He has a very powerful voice.
Howard's voice is very, it's very like old school.
Yeah.
But he can also incorporate its screams and everything else into it. So
that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's a better singer. That's another point. Sorry, Jerry.
In comparison to the prospects, I mean, you would assume.
Aaron is amazing, though, but.
This is the thing about that. Okay. All right. This is the thing about
it. Is a grown man singing. He has lived life.
Listen, no. Hear me out. Aaron Gillespie is a drummer first, and he is a singer second. Howard and Jesse are both vocalists first. Let's speak on Howard specifically, since he's kind of there for the main Jesse body of work.
Jesse was a guitarist first, then became vocalist.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, even still, I guess. But as far as
shut getting, your ass up,
if I could see you right now, I'd backhand the fuck out of you.
Now, I will give it to Aaron over the drummer and Killswitch. Aaron does have a better play style.
Oh yeah, Aaron's insane when it comes to drums.
Yeah, and like just writing. Too, like some of that stuff that he plays, like how the hell did you like come up with this, especially in that older stuff, man? Like some of the patterns and stuff that they played were just like, especially it sounded crazy.
Especially for when they were doing like a simple breakdown, you just didn't hit the chine or you just didn't hear the thrash. He would actually ride it out with the cymbals and it sounded really great.
Yeah. He was always doing something great. And seeing them live when I was younger, like I definitely would have never had the same kind of like musical appreciation, I guess, as the second time, because I was way more just like getting into the show. I was 13 years old. It was like the first big show.
You trying to talk to that girl with pink hair next to you. That's
what I was like, what's up, pinky? You want to smell my pinky? I'm just joking. Oh. That's weird.
That reminds me of the time that we were in Jackson before there was Rosalind played along with Four Today and a plea for Purgeon. You and Palm was just like, man, go talk to that girl.
Oh my gosh.
So I went over there talking to her and it had to be Carlos's fucking girlfriend.
Hey, Shaken played that show too.
Did they?
Yes. I don't remember that. Because I was playing in the band. That's the reason why we were there. I probably would have been there anyway, to be honest, but. That was when I was in Shaken. I remember that because I used to always brag. I was like, dude, I played a show with Four Today. I was like, I played a show with Four Today. It was at that place called The Vault.
Exactly. It was
the rest of the outside world is like, who is Four Today?
Yeah.
It was a big version of Four Today, For Those Rosalind and I, in Shaken.
Did Call to Preserve play that show?
Yes, they did.
Call to Preserve. Right. These names.
Call to Preserve was a hardcore band.
Yeah.
They were on Face Down Records.
I was actually more prone to hardcore music back in the day than I was like metalcore. So I like it was more thrashy and breakdowns.
I loved it all, but man, I loved metal music so much. Metal music was the main one. Under Oath was like my Achilles heel. Obviously.
Was your weakness?
I'm just saying when it comes to like me listening to like harder shit. Obviously, I used to listen to really emo things before I became just so infatuated with shit like Whitechapel and Black Dahlia Murder.
And see, that's another thing too. I think people would always kind of try to lump them into emo music, but it's, I don't know, emo to me was always like actually softer and sadder and more depressing sound.
Sure,
like,
sure. But when you think about
it all in one group now.
Yeah, when you think about the era of like MCR, The Used, Fall Out Boy, they didn't have the same get up, but they were in the same class of bands. But like, what was that band that old boy was in from Skrillex? Old Skrillex, man.
From Autumn Ashes.
No.
From First to Last. My bad.
From First to Last. Autumn Ashes was a band kind of in that era too, though. But those kind of bands, even Green Day with the Swag, you remember, like, they were not a emo band, but they leaned into that. That kind of music.
Just the look.
Yeah, it was just the look.
They were just pop punk, basically. Yeah.
No, they were just punk. They were punk, then they went to pop punk.
They were overproduced punk music. Like, it was like the most worked shit ever. I don't have a problem with it. I love that album, but I'm just saying, like, in hindsight, it's just like, it's so gumball. Like, dude, you are literally like the corporate America, and you are like basically going around doing a world tour.
But that's exactly why you heard them over somebody like, you know, Underoath for a day to remember at the time. Like, they were on the radio constantly. Yeah, it was them, and it was Simple Plan, and it was Sum 41, and it was, you know, Blink 182.
Good Charlotte.
Yeah. Which, actually, I can't take away nothing from them either, because they were still damn good bands, but, you know.
Right, yeah. Definitely. But anything that's had screaming in it for a while, there's going to be a cap. Like, there's always going to be a ceiling on anything that has screaming.
Yeah, people ain't going to be with it for too much long. Cause I think that's, it just depends. Some people like it, some people didn't. Cause I think that was my, block with it for a while. I was just like, why in the fuck they screaming?
Yeah.
And then eventually I was like, oh, okay. Well, this kind of works. And it's the same thing with hip hop and shit. Now they all want to incorporate that because they're all trying to, you know, bring that back, even though it was kind of a, like I said, I think the heyday of that sort of music was probably like 2006 all the way up to maybe like 2011 or 12 or something. Then it kind of got cut off. Then hip hop got big and that was it.
It's really all real estate when you think about it. Like, if you look at it as a pie chart, and every couple of years it shifts, and your goal as an artist is to be able to cut into as much of that real estate as possible. And honestly, that's why the trajectory for bands like that, they never go heavier. You know what I'm saying? Like, historically, they usually don't, unless they're like dedicated. You know what I'm saying? No, like, because
most of it would be considered to be, I guess, kind of like underground music. Not exactly mainstream. Like, the ones who kind of broke out.
A good example right now is Whitechapel.
Absolutely, they're getting a lot of criticism for
their new album. Yeah. A lot of the ever since, I think it was The Soul Is the Law.
Yeah,
that album. Phil did a couple of cleans in that album, and ever since that, their fans, some fans love it, some people don't love it. But their new album, Ken, it's a good album. It's a really great album. I love that album. I have no problem with, at first, I kind of didn't like Phil singing.
Right. It's weird. It's different.
it grew on me, and they still have their, let's go burn up a house with people in it, metal.
Yeah.
They still have their breakdowns and stuff like that. And then it's also got Phil singing, and they got a ballad in that fucking album.
Yeah, that I know that, like, I've heard some stuff like with acoustic guitar. Like, it sounds like they're having like a fucking, you know, Devil Went down to Georgia with an acoustic guitar type shit going on. Like, nice, obviously not that dramatic, but just like, I mean, these guys have three guitarists. They've had three guitarists for forever. And when you listen to their music, even still, but that's what I'm saying. Like, some of that acoustic stuff sounds like they're using them, and it just sounds really cool and big.
Man, there, where I work at, there's this black guy that comes into the store, and he is the biggest Whitechapel fan I've ever met in my life. He always has a Whitechapel shirt on. It's always one from every album.
Damn, that's awesome.
Turn up.
Yeah, like he's just like, man, you check out that new album? And I'm just like, yeah, I checked it out. He's like, what you think? And I'm like, it's not that bad. And he's like, man, it's one of the best ones I've heard in a while.
He's probably happy to someone to talk to about it. He's like, thank God. I thought it was just me for the longest of time.
Probably. But yeah, well, I mean, Whitechapel is a perfect example of, hey, we got to evolve to keep up with the times.
They're a perfect example as far as heavy music, that, I mean, they are the ones that are seemingly making it's more shocking almost, because for the longest time they've been that one of those bands, kind of like a Black Dahlia Murder, if you will, that just stuck with it. They're like, fuck you. We do not care if we don't ever get to play, you know, a fucking arena. We do not care about if we get to, which obviously all these bands, they go overseas and play in front of like 20,000 people and shit all the time, you know, or pre-COVID, obviously. But in these festivals are like, obviously.
Shit, now.
Yeah.
They got some places over there in Norway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no shit. They, like, what, that's COVID. Is this a new band? They killed 200 million people. Great. Bring them. Let them have
made. Give no damns.
Norway's like, please give us Travis Scott.
Pour the vodka.
And then you got bands like Bring Me the Horizon who just changed throughout the years and adapted. Right. And some of it worked, some of it didn't. So they just had to keep changing up their style.
Yeah, because, I mean, me and James discussed this before, but it's like, I think we said before, out of all the bands that have kind of like changed their sound the most drastically and have been able to, you know, adapt it well, it has to be them. Yeah. Like with that whole emo revival thing, mixing in a little bit of hip hop, mixing in different vocal stylings and different bands, Bring Me the Horizon has done it in the most, I guess, congealed way, in the best way that you could. I see. Like I said, that's why I kind of joked about Underworld. I said to myself, it sounds like they're trying to do that, but they just aren't getting it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because Bring Me the Horizon actually goes out and gets other people from different bands and incorporates different sounds.
But Bring Me the Horizon is also like entirely different. Like their music is entirely different than what it once was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like when they first started out, they were a deathcore. They moved to metalcore. Then they moved to hard rock and experimental. Now they're just everything.
It really seems like he did it is to help his vocals. It's like his every album went on, he's like, I can't do this anymore. I gotta lighten the load.
Well, he's also had vocal reconstruction work on him.
Yeah, and that usually will do it for a vocalist too. You have to revamp your style, and obviously it's working. Whatever we want to say, they get a song almost that like charts every album. So it's still doing well for themselves.
I think ever since Throne, like if there's been any band from that time that's kind of branched over at least semi-mainstream, it has to be Bring Me the Horizon. Because I remember seeing Throne on fucking MTV or something, and they blown up since that point.
Now, if Spencer from Under Oath can get on that Oli Skites page, then I'm pretty sure Under Oath could expand and become the band that they deserve to be in the world of music, but it's just all depends on Spencer.
If that band, gets any closer to Bring Me the Horizon's current sound, then I would just rather them break up and become a different band. You know, because this whole like losing this, like not losing this. I mean, clearly we're walking into two different bands or two different styles, but clearly they both left a imprint majorly. Their imprint was left in kind of the same timeline.
Even Killswitch new stuff is more like modern hard rock.
With I'm sure.
Slight screams in it. That's all what it is.
And fucking dude, like this was one thing I will say, not to harp on Bring Me the Horizon, but that Sepaternal album was like the coming of age album for like the generation like after us. Or maybe even a little further on. I don't know how you'd say generation, but at that time, the fan base at that time, that was like one of the biggest and best albums ever. I don't know if you guys ever spend a lot of time listening to that album.
I have it.
Yeah, I was in that bitch. That's a great album.
That album, and I even commit, like say to that, like, cause then even at the time, you look at it almost as Under Oath and Define the Great Line. Look at Bring Me the Horizon and where they were. And then you've got bands like Miss May I, We Came as Romans, you know, a couple of other bands. Obviously you had Bring Me the Horizon and you had The Devil Wears Prada that like influenced all these bands, but like the baton was definitely in Bring Me the Horizon's hand when Sepaternal came out. That album was not only huge, but it was not one bit overrated. It was as good as it was made out to be.
I say, you know, they've had so many bands that tried to incorporate that weird techno synth thing.
Yeah.
Like a few of them, Acid Alexandria, Attack, a few other guys.
Some of it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, Bring Me the Horizon, it worked. Like all the way through. Like when that song, what's not a Shadow of Moses, but there's another song they have, I think, where it's like, do, 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 do. I forgot the fucking name, but it's like one of my favorite songs on that damn album. But they, like I said, they're just really good at incorporating music, finding different sounds and making it work. And if Under Oath can do that, maybe they need to branch out, bring in some more talent. Maybe that'll help them, but yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of that stuff is post-production stuff. Like, you go sit up with a badass producer and engineer that's going to help you record this project, and they're going to help bring it all together. And Under Oath, they, you know, they, even with that sound, that everything just being like all like fucked up.
It's a distorted. Yeah.
Like what it sounds like in a, you know, server warehouse after an EMP blast through. the humming slowly stops. The computers are shutting down. Things spark everywhere. That's kind of how like it sounds like, you know, this aesthetic, if you will. But that all happens post-production. Whoever was doing that for Bring Me the Horizon, obviously for the rest of their stuff too, but particularly for that album, whoever they did that album with and whatever they were smoking for that album, that shit, all of it worked. It was perfect timing. Yeah, obviously this band has nothing to do with, that's what y'all should do one day. I'm not going to take the time to, be a part of it because I'm not a big enough fan of either one of them, but fucking A Day to Remember versus Bring Me the Horizon. There's enough of a difference, but their timelines are like the exact same.
Bring Me the Horizon, I guess, would, I don't know, they would possibly win just over the fact of how big they've gotten.
Honestly, and I guess
the Day to Remember's kind of fell off, but
honestly, it'd be Bring Me the Horizon for me because the Day to Remember's fallen off since.
Yeah, because they fell off.
They fell off. I didn't like this last album. The one before that one was all right, but the last album that I really enjoyed had that song that everybody fucking loved from it. All Signs Point to Lauderdale.
Oh man, what they had? Okay, look, listen, they had. The album with the It's Not Easy.
What Separates Me From You or whatever.
Oh, shit. They had Homesick in the album before that.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It's the album that had Right Back At It Again and
Common Courtesy.
Common Courtesy, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes You're the Hammer, Sometimes You're the Nail. That's the last one I liked. Jesus, I'm sorry. That's the last one I liked.
That was the one they released. They released that single and then like didn't release the album for like a whole year or some shit like that because they were like having beef with Victory Records. Is that possible?
Yeah, and, that's the one.
Yeah, and then they
Sonic Year. I'm Sonic Year Tales or something like that. Yeah,
That was on All Signs Point to Lauderdale album.
Oh my god! They also had what was it?
That's on the same album with All Signs Point to Lauderdale.
Yeah,
that went hard.
Yeah, I can see. For me, it goes. It's like for those who have heart, and the name was Treason, Homesick. What Separates Me From You? Common Courtesy. Damn near all of those. Like those are classics to me. I fucks with all them bitches. Heavy Bad Vibrations. Me, you, and Sam loved it at the time. But I think it was kind of one of those things where it's like we wanted to love it desperately. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad album at all. But
I gave you my album. That's exactly what I did. I gave that to you as a birthday present.
Yeah, you were just like, here you go, man.
I was like, it's all right. I was like, it's all right here.
On the new album, I did like, I like Resentment. That went hard.
I don't like none of them.
I liked Mind Reader and Resentment. That's about it. But it's like the newest one, yeah, I don't know. They kind of did that thing where it's like, they're doing different shit, but it's just not fitting.
Unlike the new Bring Me the Horizon. So we'll knock this out right now. Bring Me the Horizon wins.
Yeah, I was about to say, I guess you guys don't have to dedicate an hour and a half to it. You could just say that
Bring Me the Horizon. If we're just talking about longevity and who's been able to transform themselves, when it comes to that, I think Bring Me the Horizon wins everything. Like, when it comes to being able to transform themselves successfully, it's them. But I don't know shit, because I have a lot of Bring Me the Horizon albums. Yeah. Like that was, I would say A Day to Remember just for nostalgia, but Bring Me the Horizon, yeah, because they did pretty good.
Bring Me the Horizon is a tie-dyed and washed and dried shirt, but
Did you just write that down?
Listen, no, a day to remember. I'm holding a wand in my hand. A day to remember is a shirt that you continue to throw in the dryer with dryer sheets, hoping that it'll stop smelling like shit. But eventually you just can't do nothing about it. I'm not saying that it smelled like shit. I'm just saying they're trying to do the same shirt over and over again and pretending that it's not going to eventually start smelling like shit. Whereas Bring Me the Horizon might not be the same beautiful shirt that it once was. It's still a pretty cool ass shirt because they tie dyed it and they washed it. At least
they tie dyed it and they washed it for a different group while at the same time not completely pissing off the old group.
Sure.
It's like they made to a certain extent. And this is pretty hard to do. They actually have some of their old fans like their new shit.
Yeah.
Like me, like James. You know what I'm saying? It's like you want to hate it just because it sounds different, but it's like, damn, it's not that bad.
It's like once I actually sat down and took the time out to listen to it, it grabbed my attention. Because a lot of it has that more of a new metal influence to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because one song straight up, Teardrops, sounds just like fucking Linkin Park.
Yep.
So I mean, it caught my attention.
It's like they know where to get their, if it's just a hodgepodge of influences, they know where to get good influences from and they know how to mix it in well. So you don't feel, I guess, as ostracized as other people will feel. But then again, we're not that bougie of listeners. Like we try to listen to different shit every now and then.
We try not to be fickle.
I also feel like Killswitch and Under Oath could take a page and try that as well.
I can assure you, Killswitch doesn't give a shit.
No. I can assure you, both bands don't give a shit. They know what they're doing.
But see, the difference is that like Killswitch not giving a shit is all right. Like
it's all right, but no,
they can
continue
to do so. I think, but it's like with Under Oath,
Actually, they're two EPs they just released, B-sides, something like that, ain't doing well for Killswitch.
Mm.
People aren't liking it that much.
I wonder why.
This sounds just like Attunement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is called, you said it's called B-sides?
Something like that. I'd have to look it up again.
If it's called B-sides, maybe it's because it's dated songs. So, I mean, if it's not dated songs, then that gives a terrible perception.
We pulled these out of the trash.
Yeah, like I say, it gives a terrible perception to your fans if you're not wanting them to think it's B-sides.
It's like, but, don't even worry about it.
Sorry, it's called Attunement 2.
You don't have to stream
it. I'm sorry, it's called Attunement 2 B-sides.
Ah, there you go. So it is secondary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just means that they had those songs as well in the tuck, and they're like, well, we're not putting these on the album, so we'll just save them, and then we'll put something else out because we can't tour this fucking album because we're stuck in the goddamn house, which they probably were when they put the album out.
You can't use that excuse for everything.
It came out in May last year, so yeah.
I guess closing it off now, I mean, Shane, how do you feel? Are you still... with Under Oath?
Of course he is. Closing arguments, of course. I am still with Under Oath. That's it. We're going to his house.
Just because you got that hand job from that girl.
First of all, I want to say it's good to see both of y'all still alive after the whole entire Drake and Kanye fiasco.
Drake ain't going to do nothing to nobody.
Yeah, look, man, me and Alex might as well go ahead and eat hot chocolate and drink chocolate bars. I don't know why I was trying to say something better, but because motherfucking Drake and Kanye West are singing Kumbaya, so there's clearly not, I mean, they're having a concert together in Los Angeles together.
And I'm pretty sure they will release a very underwhelming album that everybody will hype on.
So no knock talk, no gang shit going on? Gotcha.
No. I'm glad we got that episode off though before I found out about this, because I just would have been dissing on Drake the whole time too. We'll see. His album sucked. All those Drake disses meant nothing now. And not to mention that null and voids the Drake disses from the previous album. So you guys are good now. Great. Thanks. That's what we wanted. That's what we really wanted.
So it was a business decision at this point. That's if anybody was sitting in their house getting mad at Kanye over Drake, they look dumb as fuck right now. Cause I mean, them dudes is chilling out. Chappelle was out there.
He was talking about killing this man. He was talking about killing this man for two albums straight. And Kanye poked the bear and caused him to talk shit in that second album. And it's like, now you guys are like, cool.
Well, it's all business, man. He has to put on that show.
Yeah.
Yes, he has to do that.
Drake needs, he ain't got to do shit. Drake need, what Drake needs to do. What Drake needs to do is he needs to double cross that man the same way he double crossed him like 17 times. So he should just
he might throw a little, you know, Drake is very smart when it comes to like dissing people. He might throw some little light diss on the album that they work with together, and then Kanye ain't gonna think about it until like half a year later and be like, hold up, was he talking about Kim? Did he fuck Kim? Oh no, he fuck Kim. Shit. Let me go on some show and talk about it to everybody and get upset.
Always does. This dude said that Jesus wants him and Kim to get back together, that it's gonna save marriages across the world.
Wait, Kanye like said that?
I swear to God, dude.
In so many words, he was on stage talking about essentially like why marriages are important and why people should see like a good family base be, you know, stay together or whatever. And I'm just like, dude,
I can't disagree,
you got
with
Kim because you knocked her up. Like, we all knew that.
I mean, I can't disagree with what he's saying. You know?
Yeah, but like, look at what he's thing. Look at what he's doing though, dude. Like, he is basically putting his the mother of his child on blast while she's like dating somebody. Look, their relationship I could give a damn less about. But to you, I understand where you're coming from, James, as far as like, well, it probably would be better for their family, but he should be worried about his family and not necessarily about everyone else's family.
Shane, it always goes down to this. Kanye is really good at making good points sometimes, but when you actually put some thought into it, in the context of what he uses, you know, what he says these points from, makes no fucking sense. His family is not the poster family for America.
No.
It just isn't. Now, you're talking about families coming together and trying to make a marriage work. Well, then, depends.
I get that, but I can care less about Kanye. What he's saying, it makes sense, but...
It's like saying, not your family.
But him saying... But how he's doing and how he, you know, him saying it, I don't care less, but what he's like saying, said, it makes sense.
I think we all knew when Kanye got with Kim, even himself. Like, I think he made a diss at Kim a few times before he got married to her. We all know what happened. He knocked her up, and then they were like, well, let's make a business out of this. Fuck it. And then that was it. That's how that went. And now she's back doing her shit. So.
Grimy Pete Davidson.
I still don't understand it like that. Like,
Closing remarks for me would have been 2006, 2009. Killswitch would not be taking it. Under Oath would be, but since this is current times.
Since you're grown.
Killswitch Engage does take it, but I do think both bands have a lot to learn and could progress their sounds better. And Alex?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so one of the next ones I'm thinking about doing for the pit is throwing Fall Out Boy versus MCR.
Oh my God.
That's MCR.
Oh my God. Dude, hold on, Alex. What are you talking about? Are you serious?
Yes.
Dude, there is no way.
Dude. Ain't nobody,
great conversation to be had.
Who has a girlfriend or an ex-girlfriend who cried over the idea of MCR getting back together. Fall Out Boy has been back together on and off. And while they are legends in their own right, MCR is like fucking Bigfoot. They are mythical. Amongst the scene, people will kill themselves. Even outside of the scene.
Hey, they did have people cutting their wrists. They had preppy even girls.
No, the idiots did that.
So y'all two save this because I'm Shane will probably be a part of this one for Fall Out Boy, it sounds like.
Dude, I don't know how to. That's a
blame you for that's a, me.
But you can't blame me for hating it. Kiss him.
But before that,
suck a cock early because I.
Sorry. Or after that, or somewhere around that time, me and Alex is also going to throw two game series into the pit.
Uh-oh.
That is Halo versus Gears.
Didn't we already do that one?
We already, you know, versus them from like. We're talking about the game series overall, not Gears 5 and Halo 5.
I bet y'all won't do Halo versus Call of Duty.
It's Halo. Why, Halo would win.
Oh, man. Hey, you know what sucks about that? It's because we probably are all three on the same page. Like, I probably be like, nah, I don't really fuck with Call of Duty, we can
have that little short discussion right now. Call of Duty gets them in the multiplayer lane, but mainly because multiplayer blew up because of fucking Modern Warfare 4, and then everybody started playing video games around that time. Halo actually has a story. Halo has a better every damn thing. It's just simple. It's also because we're bigger nerds. That's what it is. Yeah. Also, we like complex lore.
Also, Activision hasn't been fucking up like 343 and Bungie.
That's like saying, do you like Lil Wayne or Young Thug more?
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, it's kind of like Young Thug is Call of Duty. It's like everybody loved him for a while, but now people finally realize that it's just not that impressive.
It's like, it's cool. It peaked out, and now people are like, you know what, man, Lil Wayne's still amazing. It's like all through all this time, he's still amazing. Same thing with Halo. It's like Halo's still awesome. I watched the trailer.
I heard the new one. They kind of did like an open.
They went open world with it. But the developers also stated that the Halo Infinite campaign is going to come out in December, but you can only play it solo. You won't be able to play with your friends. You won't be able to co-op it, split screen it until May of next year,
which is bullshit.
Oh no, I agree. They said they wanted to focus on the story and the multiplayer,
and I respect.
Or they did anything, which I get. But the head of Microsoft or head of Xbox, Phil, himself stated how they went about this was the biggest, dumbest, fucking stupidest decision ever they ever made. He said they treated this unlike anything else, and he regrets how they treated it because of all the fans who were pissed off. He said he's apologizing. He's trying to fix it the best he could. But it's so much out of his control because the studio owns it, even though he's, over everybody.
Passing the buck like a bitch. Not my fault, guys. It's not my fault.
But he said how for every other game that's coming out, they will be taking a different approach to it. Which I respect Phil, ever since Phil came over the head of Microsoft and Xbox, he's gotten them down the right path. I've been trying to do better things, like open up the doors to game developers, trying to get their Japanese developers on board with them, you know, trying to get more console exclusives and just trying to make it more of a compact friendly gaming.
It's like you see the camera like slowly pans over the James PC and you see like a big ass picture of Phil Spencer like laying across a sheet naked. Like
it's like blurred out already, bro.
And a gun is pointed to his head.
He's like, what the hell?
But yeah, I mean, I guess people are just a little bit disappointed about it because, I mean, that was the same shit that happened with Halo 5. And co-op has always been a part of that, you know, a part of Halo pretty much. But, you know, if the game is good, which I've been hearing that it is.
The multiplayer is great. Yeah. Like you know that trailer we watched? It plays that.
Yeah, and we were saying it was going to change multiplayer. Like, I was saying, if there's a way for Halo to come back on top, this is it. It looks like it's already
unbeaten. Battlefield's new game.
They said that was trash.
They said it's trash. It's toppling Call of Duty right now. Even though Warzone is still toppling everything because it's Battle Royale game of the year. Fortnite's trying to come back, but Fortnite can only do is their fucking collabs.
They are the thing of this season. That's what it is. They'll be on top because they're Fortnite. The brand is whatever it is.
What are you saying, Shane?
With them, man, like, to Alex's point, like, they are like what the thing is right now, but like, it's not going to stand the test of time.
Although, as soon as those kids grow up.
Yeah, like really, well, what's weird to me, man, is I keep fucking saying that too, and more and more I find like these people my age that are like banging it out on Fortnite, and I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
I know a lot of grown ass men who still play Fortnite because it's the battle royale game they call it because it's easy to get kills, it's easier to set your defenses up, it's easier to have fun and play with your teammates, and I'm just like,
It's popular. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. Because you remember when Apex came out, and you had a lot of people who moved over to Apex initially because they wanted something quote unquote more adult and I guess less popular than than fucking Fortnite.
And for some reason, they never heard of Players Unknown Battleground.
It just didn't work. Like, a lot of those people went back to Fortnite because Fortnite has that spot where it's like, if you want to be a streamer, if you want to be a popular streamer, that's what a lot of this shit comes down to.
Well, I mean, it was also Ninja, streamer Ninja. You know, Ninja has ties to Drake and stuff like that. You know, Drake told Ninja that if he won this match, he would drop $600,000 into his bank account. He won the match.
Damn. That's a lot of fucking money.
Ninja didn't get paid, though. Didn't pay him.
Drake flew the coupon on that one.
Oh, damn. That's amazing.
And he was just like, you know what? I don't even fucking care. I won the match because I wanted to win it for the stream, not for him.
Drake's probably like, man, this little kid shit. I'm about to go over here. You know that's what he was saying. I don't give a fuck about this nerd shit.
See, at the time, Drake was all about that Fortnite, though. He was playing it himself.
But that's the problem. Like, that's the issue with Fortnite. You know, it's the fact that it's kind of like, it's just a game that people, it's popular. That's literally what it is. Travis Scott and Ariana Grande.
They're getting all these musicians that come into the game. So it's making it more popular, making it more hip.
It's culturally within the zeitgeist of American culture right now. Like, you have John Wick, you have Thanos blow up in it. It's just the thing, in the biggest way of the sense. So if something else comes along.
And the biggest collaboration they just had was Naruto in it. So now they just got all the anime nerds.
That's crazy. And I know the amount of skins that you can buy on there is like insane.
Well, I mean, if you play it on Xbox, you can get the Master Chief skin. On PlayStation, you can get the God of War skin. On Nintendo Switch, I think you can either get like the Mario or Link skin for it. And it's just like, what?
They know how to grab a little bit from everything and say, hey, if you want to play as this character that you already love and are, you know, popular the game, then you can do that. It's a way to actually, it's kind of smart because it's a way to grab in more players.
It's a good way to market to people.
Yeah, they had that thing where it's like they shut the game down for like a day or two, and then they pretty much ushered in the second season or something.
Each season. Yeah.
So, I mean, I give them that. They know how to market, but I don't know, you know.
It's also crazy to me that, like, apparently, and I could be wrong about this, but to my understanding, like, this game was not made, like, the Battle Royale thing was to get them through beta testing, like, for people to just play around doing that. And be like, hey, just how do you like the physics and the function? And it's like it turned into a fucking phenomenon.
Well, my understanding, like,
oh, fuck our regular game.
From my understanding, Fortnite was actually just going to be a tower defense game where you set defenses and you took out like these vegetable aliens type deal.
Yeah,
it's called Fortnite Save the World. But through that, they saw that people were having fun, and they're just like, all right, so let's make this battle royale because it's hype, and that's where that beta came from. And that beta actually got so popular they turned it into a full-length free-to-play game.
It was lightning in a bottle sort of situation, because I think a friend of mine actually had bought it. I think when it was initially came out, he's like, the game sucks, it's boring. And then it blew up the next year, and he says, I don't fucking get it. And I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
It ain't for you to get. Like,
the guy who I game share with on Xbox, Carl Crafty, because I stream with him too, he went out and bought the game. Because it's like, oh, it's going to be a fun little tower defense game. We can set defenses, shoot aliens and stuff. It was boring as fuck.
That's
just, I don't know. Maybe it just doesn't appeal to older gamers. I mean, well, it's kind of like Minecraft. It's just one of those things. It's lightning in a bottle. It appeals to one group. It blows up. And usually if you can get the kids, well, you can get anything.
Look, Fortnite came at a great time too. Because online, FPS, anytime. I mean, people were getting – Halo was getting bad reviews. Or subpar reviews, and fucking Call of Duty was getting redundant because, and they were trying to be like Halo for some reason. Like, they were trying to throw the death blow to Halo. It's like, dude, your story is as dull as a sack of flour. So, like, don't give me that bullshit. Like,
first Modern Warfare games are actually pretty good, and Black Ops was.
I mean, it was Sledgehammer who was fucking up, but, Infinity Ward was fucking up, but Sledgehammer was still doing good with the Black Ops. Now, when Black Ops 3 and 4 came out, that's where they kind of messed up, but that's when they took it back to Cold War and stuff like that, and that's why Modern Warfare came out, and they just started trying to bring it back to how Battlefield was, because Battlefield never stepped into the future until this game, and then
And we see how that played out. We can talk about that on a different episode of a podcast. But that the reviews for that have come back, and people are not stoked about the new Battlefield, by the way.
No, it's actually one of the worst reviewed games on Steam.
Just say
they don't learn one day.
Well, dude. I see EA too, so I mean, what do you expect?
They don't care. That's dude, you want to know what it looks like? It looks like Battlefield 3 to me almost, except just slightly better graphics.
I played the beta or whatever when it came out like a month or two ago, and I played it for about 30 minutes, and I was like, I do not want to play this. I was like, maybe when the actual game comes out, it will be better. But word from my coworker, and from before I actually saw the reviews online, he bought it the day it came out, or he had it prepaid or paid for already, and he got it, and he's like, dude, they've changed so much stuff, and he's like, and just the gameplay alone, it just is trash. So
yeah. It's just fun. Jesse Miramontes was telling me about it and how bad it is because he comes into the store quite often. And I was just like, well, I haven't played Battlefield since 4, so I ain't going to play it.
Yeah, I've got five, or whichever one came out after Battlefield 1, whichever that is. I have that on my Xbox, but it was free. It was on Game Pass, so I downloaded it, and it's fun to play. I like Battlefield 1 a lot.
I take that back. The last one I played was Hardline. I liked the one Tired Cops versus Robert Hill.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway. Like I said, one of the next ones we'll do is Fallout Boy versus MCR. We'll throw them into the pit. And after that, we'll do Gears versus Halo. We'll throw them into the pit. And one of the other ones I've been thinking about is throwing Kingdom Hearts versus Legend of Zelda in the pit.
Oh, my God.
You know, I'm going to say Kingdom Hearts. You're going to say Legend of Zelda.
Actually, I've been replaying through some of the Zelda games, and I'm just like,
Skyward Sword. That's a black sheep.
And I'm just like, man.
Even though it's a really good game, but still.
That's a pretty good mashup, though, James. I mean, because if you think about it, because at first, my first thought was like, well, I mean, how do you really put, you know, Zelda? I mean, obviously, there's plenty of ways, but how do you put Zelda up against Kingdom Hearts? Because there's so much more material with Zelda. But I'm forgetting all of the stuff.
Yeah, Zelda's lore, while expansive, it doesn't congeal in the same way that Kingdom Hearts does. It's like Zelda's like every 100,000 years, there's a new hero.
The same thing happens. Has
something, yeah, kind of, but not. And there's like thin connections between each of them, whereas Kingdom Hearts is like, it's the same characters. They all kind of have one thing to go on. Maybe like over 20 years spans, thousands of years. We don't know yet. Yeah. But yeah, it's, you have characters that you can always kind of come back to that you enjoy. Whereas Zelda is, I don't know.
Zelda, honestly, what's kind of weird is Zelda is like the same characters in like every game, just different variations. Just
different times. And yeah.
Which is interesting. So I guess that, but even still, I mean, the thing you could argue easily that with Kingdom Hearts is that it's confusing as fuck if you like, if you're not like Zelda's super into
confusing.
It.
Yeah, I would say Zelda's also confusing because of one game that's Ocarina of Time. If it wouldn't been for Ocarina of Time.
Throws it all the fuck off.
Right. If it wasn't for Ocarina of Time, we'd be down one path. But since Ocarina of Time came out, they stated that's where the timeline splits into three fucking directions. Because either Link lives, he dies, or he gets transported back in time at the end of the game, which is how the game ends to begin with. He goes back in fucking time. So I don't see why there had to be two timelines.
And so it seems like that would be
because
the
But because it was already Legend of Zelda, Legend of Zelda 2, Link's Adventure, and then Link to the Past, they had to make that timeline split because that's the Fallen Hero timeline. So...
And then you got the fact that Skyward Sword pretty much rewrites everything and makes Demise and the fuck basically all Ganondorf's and everything else come from Demise. Yeah. And Demise is the reason why this shit even keeps happening is because he cursed Link and Zelda and all the people down the line to be at war with him.
Right. It's where Kingdom Hearts is just.
It's just convoluted.
Oh, here it is. Story one, close the door of darkness. Oh, story two, we gotta go find Riku and Kari. Oh, here's this fucking castle. Let's go to this castle. Kingdom Hearts 2, who the fuck is Roxas? Oh, we're back to playing Sora. Is Sora.
Who's this blonde haired kid? Is Shane? It's like the thing with it is that Kingdom Hearts, the story with Sora in it is actually quite cut and dry. Like, you get what you get. But it's the lore that surrounds Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, let's stop for a second. Let's go play Birth by Sleep. It's the first game. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go play the cell phone game.
That's where the shit goes.
Union Cross. Yeah. Let's watch Backpage. Now let's play Xehanort, the Dark Chronicle ones to catch up.
The Dark Road.
The Dark Road.
And there's something else.
You mean there's time travel in this? What?
Oh yeah.
Is Joshua the keeper of everything?
Everybody is Xehanort.
Everybody's Everybody has Xehanort in them.
Everyone is Xehanort.
Yeah. Basically, the Union Cross ends with that. Like, pretty much the character that you are playing or some it's shit Xehanort. Eventually becomes Xehanort or has a piece of Xehanort in him and so on and so forth. It gets fucking wild. But yeah, so it's like they're both confusing. It's just that Kingdom Hearts confusion is you can actually draw some connections to it after a lot of fucking thought. Zelda is
an effort.
Yeah, because you had to have the book. So the only person who would know about that is James at this point. You got to read through the book. Because I even think before Skyward Sword, there's a link before him. It's like the book opens up with him. And yeah, some other kind of shit. There's actually a very dark story.
Yeah, there's actually a comic in the back of the book. And the comic takes place of what happened on the Earth before the goddess puts the cloud over the Earth and raises this one part up. And that's that. And it's just like,
I guess, yeah, that may be Sky City, I guess.
Can you or can you not play any Zelda game without playing a different one and still get a lot of information and enjoyment out of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts, I feel like, is the only game, or excuse me, you almost have to play the first game in order to play any of the other ones and know what the fuck is going on.
Yep. And that, I guess, would be the negative mark against it in a way, because with Zelda games, because they're not completely connected, you can kind of enjoy each game as like its own thing. Right. Whereas Kingdom Hearts, you do have to kind of have like some connection to it. But like I was saying, if you play 1, 2, and 3 and all you give a shit about is Sora, well then, cool.
Yeah, if you only care about Sora, then you can just play 1, 2, and 3 and get the story.
You'll literally be Sora, though. You'll literally have the same thought process as Sora.
I'm sorry, you would have to also play Retain of Memories and Dream Drop Distance to understand, but they do give you enough concept throughout those three games to understand it. But if you want the full story, you would have to play those two added along, but you can just play 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3, you'll be doing yourself a disservice. To be fair, if all you know is the knowledge of 1, 2, and 3 without getting something from the stuff outside of that, you'd be doing yourself a disservice, especially if you enjoyed the 1, 2, and 3. At least acquiring some kind of knowledge, because, I mean, I didn't play any of those games between 2 and 3, but I did do a significant amount of, like, because Alex was putting me onto, like, these YouTube videos and shit, and I was like, well, I kind of got to get somewhat caught up, to be full transparency. I was still very confused.
The cool thing about 3 is they do allow you to go look at the archives and stuff like that, and they do give you videos to watch. But it just doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, no, it ain't the same as like when you play 300 and whatever days and you see old girl die in front of Roxas and shit. Like, it doesn't hit. Like, you gotta play that shit. You gotta watch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the cries, man, the feels, the tears.
It ain't the same as when you're playing Birth by Sleep and you know that everybody in this hole is going to die and Aqua pretty much just gets left to the realm of darkness and shit. Like, it is a whole different experience. So it's kind of like if you play 3 after seeing all that crap, it hits. But it's like, if not, you'll just be like, okay. You know, that's kind of how it was with the whole Union Cross crap. Like, when they threw in an old boy, wasn't it Ephemer or something?
Ephemer.
Yeah, when they threw him in at the last minute in 3, I was like, oh, it's that dude. That's all I got from that.
Well, because I had watched a lot of Gamer Joint, he did actually talk a lot about Union Cross throughout his series.
Yeah.
When I saw Ephemer, I was like, by fucking time, they connected that shit. Let's fucking go. He was running the Keyblades and shit with all the other – What it was is in 3, if you beat the game up to a certain point, or you did, you beat it before they made it, Union Cross, and it was just called Chain X or something like that, you actually got your name included in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Like, so I caught on that. I was saying to myself, if somebody was playing Union Cross, they're probably crying right now.
Right. Because they're probably slaying it, because when you're using the Keyblade Tornado fighting the Heartless Tornado, you can actually see the usernames go through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then of course, if you play Remind, it really makes a lot of sense to Remind is really damn good for DLC. Like at first, I was kind of pissed off about it, but I said to myself, this is basically the final mix version of that shit.
Yeah.
It makes everything make sense.
Yeah.
And, so it's like, Shane, if you haven't played that, I would recommend playing Remind.
I will definitely, I will keep that in mind.
Huh? Oh, you lame bitch.
Yeah, but you'd have to buy a Remind.
Yeah.
It's DLC. Anyway, let's wrap this up.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, guys. Organic Poison Podcast. Check it out. It's streaming everywhere this podcast is streaming. And also, a new episode comes on every Tuesday on deviantbehaviorradio.com at 8 p.m. No, at 7 p.m. It will probably be pretty close to you over.
People by checking in the wrong time.
But, yeah, that's deviantbehaviorradio.com. And also, I'm on Instagram at Shane Izzo. So that's S-H-A-N-E-I-S-O.
And,
what would you boy?
And hopefully you'll have us on soon because I actually do want to, you know, just sit around and goof off and talk like you and Xander's been doing on a couple of the episodes with you.
Absolutely. You both are always welcome on my show.
Oh, because I recently just listened to Why So Sensitive and a couple other ones at work. So
hell yeah. Hell yeah. You know, I've noticed something with when I promote my podcast and whatever, like I'll be looking to the episodes that like I've just done. Cause I'll be seeing, I'm getting like new listeners periodically. You know, number goes up and goes down, stuff like that. But sometimes I'll look and like, I'll see where like some people have like listened to, you know, five or six episodes. And it's like, this is so weird. And I'll look and it's like older episodes. So when I go back and look at my numbers for my older episodes, it seems like a lot of people, what they'll do is when they come to the show to listen to it, they go all the way back to like the first episode and start there, which by all means, it's fine with me because that just means they're actually.
Well, that's actually a pretty good thing because that means they're trying to get to your show. That means they heard something from one of your newer episodes and they liked it enough to actually say, okay, I'm going to start binging this channel.
Actually, one of our most popular episodes is a review episode that me, him, and Sam did.
Yeah,
and that's The Last of Us Part Two, and then
yeah.
The second one has been ones following that has either been our reviews or our theories on Kingdom Hearts. So
yeah, that's usually. I mean, the thing is like one good thing about having the podcast where you guys have like specific topics is you can just fill up the, you know, more consistent and you're more consistent within the spectrum of the same things you're talking about. You can usually kind of hone in on an audience, which is pretty good stuff because I mean, you might bring somebody in because of Kingdom Hearts, but they might stay because of Killswitch Engage. You know, oh man, these guys listen to Killswitch Engage too. You know, like that kind of stuff.
It's I always wanted to have a variety when I did this anyway. So whatever kind of topic we might do, you know, it might be different from like last week we reviewed Neon Genesis, the whole entire fucking anime series.
Yeah.
So the best of all. Yeah. I was like, I'm lost, but I'm getting it.